The following program is brought to you in living color.
Let's start drinking.
Oh, not so fast. In order for the tannins to mellow, we should let it breathe for about 30 minutes.
Freaking tannins.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about wine but were afraid to ask. That's what we are here for. We are your media resource for everything pertaining to our favorite fruit, the designated cute, round, plump, squishy little grape. We've all taken deep breaths now. We're all pleasant. Everyone's happy. We have started out to 2012, and I know we had some great shows towards the end of 2011, but the one thing I'm refusing to do this year is last year I tried to give you advice. I tried to move you along the merry way of try something new to pick your New Year's wine resolutions, and I heard from a lot of you that you had blown it within 6 weeks of the new year. So this year, we are resolving not to do any more resolutions. I think we've all hit the age where pretty much that's our mentality anyway. But I would like to hear from you. For those of you who stood by your 2011 resolution and you went back and you revisited wines that for one reason or the other you had written off at some point because you decided you didn't like them, they were too expensive, you didn't like the vineyards. For those of you who actually went back and revisited those wines, call us 877-4CRUSH1 or email me, Laura Lawson at winecrush.com. Or, of course, you can go on the website, winecrush.com, and put your 2 cents worth in there. But I want to know if any of you were successful in finding new favorites out of old wines that you had written off. I did a good job on my resolution. I made a point to go by and try all of these wines that I had pretty much decided I hated, didn't like the winemaker, didn't like who supplied them. And I would say it's one of the wisest thing I had done because ultimately I went back, I found some new favorites, and wines or wineries that I had, I would never say cast aspersions on, I got to take a new sharp look at them. And in doing so, realized a lot. I think the most important thing to remember and realize, and this was the lesson I learned in 2011, is every year is not the same. We are not making a pharmaceutical product here. Between the nature, between the winemaker, between the land, between new vines, every year something can change, and every year it has an impact on the wine. So I appreciated my efforts. I would say that 60% of what I had written off as terrible wines, I went back, drank again, and would continue to drink. Now, the other 40%, I was dead on the first time. They definitely did not deserve a revisit. There were a lot of plants that got watered as I revisited wineries that I disliked. So I do want to know how it worked out for you. And also, I want to know if anyone came up with another great wine resolution for this year. 2012, what is your wine plan? Kent, do you have a 2012 resolution?
I don't, but I visited my wine past during the holidays.
Your wine what?
My wine past. Spirits of wine past.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I'm kind of like going back, and I had a great big cup of, metal cup full of Boone's Cave.
Did you now? And you did it deliberately?
Metal cup, yeah. That's what I did in high school. We used to drive around, and we'd grab some Boone's Cave.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Were you pleased?
I'm sorry, this was college. I was not allowed to do this in high school.
Absolutely not. Were you pleased with what you found?
No.
Okay.
Didn't taste the same.
Well, that's actually what I think a lot of people have found as they go back and revisit things. Wine is totally subjective, but your palate changes. Whether all of a sudden, think about this in a vegetable or a food point of view. I, forever, growing up, hated mayonnaise. Absolutely despised mayonnaise.
Really?
Would not eat it. Could not tolerate it. Mom, just for meanness, would put it on and in everything, hoping at some point I would start eating it. And about 5 years ago, my palate, my taste have changed enough that I started eating that. Same thing holds true for the occasional spinach.
What was the magic moment? When did you rediscover mayonnaise?
I don't know. I honestly have.
Is your phone going to do this all the way through the whole show?
Well, actually, I was going to talk to you about it. That's not my phone. I don't know what that is.
You don't know what that is?
No, it's really not my
phone. All right, you do the show. I'll come in and investigate.
Why don't you do that? Because whatever it is, sounds like it's about to blow up. Anyway, so we're having fun here on The Crush today. These are all of our new sounds that apparently we are just going to incorporate in the show. We could actually make a contest out of this. Please identify new sounds, new things, and please tell us what you think they are. Well, today, you are not stuck just listening to me. We actually have a guest. We have Mr. John Bond. He is the wine editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. He is joining us to discuss. He had done an article today, article recently, that was going over top vintners that you may never have heard of, top 100 of people that maybe you never got around to. So it's going to be interesting getting his take. This way we can have a fresh take on some new vintners this year. Well, speaking of fresh takes, me, the Chardonnay Queen. I started out my brand new year with a white wine that was not a Chardonnay, and I was absolutely in love with it. There is a wine that King Estates makes. Now, King Estates, we've talked about them in the past. Obviously, this is a great Oregon winery. They do some very interesting wines. Of course, their Pinots are great, their Pinot Gris. But they have come around, and they're doing a whole new second label. It's called Acrobat, and the motto of Acrobat is land on your feet. And I had the opportunity to try their 2010 Pinot Gris. It's absolutely fantastic. Has great balance to it. It's all stainless steel. It's very clean. It's very easy to drink. What I think is neat about it is a lot of times with Pinot Gris, they tend to just kind of drift off your palate. They kind of are just almost too easy drinking. What Acrobat does with this is age Sir Lee for 5 months. And Sir Lee is not a designation for Kent. No, I am not actually using this to describe his mood. Sir Lee is S-U-R-L-I-E. Actually, it looks like Sir Lie. And what this means is a wine is kept in the barrels on the dead yeast. And every now and then the yeast is stirred up, batonnage, so that you get some of the complexity and get some of the flavors in this. Anyway, generally Pinot Gris is not aged Sir Lee. It is something that is filtered off, cleaned off, and fermented all by its little lonesome. And so spending time in oak, putting the Sir Lee on it just really, really balances out. You get great orange flavors. You get great pear, citrus. This is definitely a line I want to take a look at all the way across the board because if this Pinot Gris is any induction to the rest of the line, this is definitely a winner. Now, our red wine recommendation, of course, I have to go with a Cabernet for the very first wine recommendation of the year. Napa Valley, I have to admit, I am partial to. But this is a winery that usually I fall back on their Chardonnay, Newton. Newton does some amazing things out of Napa, and I have been a big Newton Chardonnay fan for ages. I'm a big Newton Claret fan. But I finally got around to their 08 Cabernet. And what I thought was great about this, since I'm talking about the fact things are surly with the whites and things that may or may not be unfiltered, usually Cabernets find a way to be filtered. They find a way to be cold fermented. They find a way to actually make sure they're manipulated toward the end. So obviously you have a clearer wine. Newton has an unfiltered Cabernet off of Spring Mountain. Now, mountain fruit's always very dark. It's very extracted. A lot of people get a blueberry flavor off this. This thing is just a monster, absolute monster. Cigar box, white pepper, and of course the black fruit I was talking about, all ripe, very, very concentrated. This will go with just about any type of meat you could imagine, whether you're reaping the benefits of, I don't know, venison, boar, whatever you are out hunting, or if you're like me, you're at the grocery store hunting cows, this is the perfect pair to it. This is absolutely spectacular.
Boar and venison, okay.
Well, I am trying to think outside the box. Uh-huh. There are people occasionally that ride into the Crush and say, why do you just stick with steak? I'm sorry, I talk about what I know. I do hunt the cow at the grocery store.
What goes good with possum?
Well, probably the Boone's Farm you mentioned earlier, but I won't swear to it. That's not a pairing I've gotten out to lately. Anyway, your red wine recommendation is 2008 Newton Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa Valley. If you have not had a chance to have this Spring Mountain fruit, it is definitely worth checking out. So red wine Newton, your white wine Acrobat by King Estates, and I think that will get you off to a great start to launch the year. Now, of course, not doing resolutions. That means we're resolving to do nothing special here on The Crush this year. I'm not going to drag out and make you drink Merlot. I'm not going to drag you out and make you revisit old wines. But I do want everyone to go into this year with an open mind. And to use as an example, I am not known as being the most open-minded person on the planet. There are no two ways about it. It's kind of a running joke. Just like when Kent came in here trying to find what that noise was that was driving us nuts, we knew it was some kind of technology. And this is something I have a deep aversion to. However, the people who are surrounding me all have iPhones. They all have, they can bump each other. They can do all these things. And they're telling me that I'm not communicating effectively as I should be. So I have been given an iPad. Now, I kind of looked at it and I thought this ought to be entertaining. The one thing I did enjoy the fact was is I had a bigger venue to play Angry Birds on. I'm like, okay, this is great. I can see the birds better. I can see the little pigs.
That's the big advantage.
It is. Well, after 3 days of spending time playing Angry Birds, I kind of got the feeling that this thing could do some more. So being an open-minded in 2012, I've started using the iPad and I understand the addiction now. And this is the type of thing I am looking for all of you to do in 2012. Even though we're not going to set guidelines, we're not going to make you do anything specific, be open-minded. Don't be like Miles, like he was in the movie Sideways. I'm not drinking Merlot. If anyone orders Merlot, I'm leaving. You can't go through life like that because there's so many variances between vintages. There's so many different variances between winemakers. And, of course, there's so many different grapes and different regions that are really coming to a head. Let this year be your experimental year. Break out of your mold, break out of your norm, and do something different. Now, of course, the good thing about having a radio show is I get to take advantage of this consensus of knowledge our listeners have. And since I am bringing up the fact that I now have an iPad, I need help from you. As I go through and have learning to go through this app store that Apple has, to me, it's just absolutely overwhelming. And we've had some great guests on the show that will talk about different applications or different places you can go on the internet, but we've really had no one ever step up and recommend apps for wine. I want to know, all of you wine listeners out there, what apps are you using on your phones, on your iPads, on your computers with wine that you have found to be absolutely can't live without, immeasurably wonderful? 877-4CRUSH-1 or email me, lauralawson@winecrush.com. Hey, we're going to take a quick break right here, but we're going to have more of The Crush when we return.
Check out winecrush.com for weekly wine recommendations, recipes, blogs, and news items.
Have you heard? Proactive is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 1-800-655-0591 because we're going to let a million people try Proactive risk-free, get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591.
If your car is less than 10 years old and has less than 100,000 miles on it, your car will eventually break down and you'll need to go to your local repair shop. And we all know dealing with these guys can be very expensive. A new transmission can cost over $3,000, a new engine more than $3,500, new air conditioning can cost over $1,700, and a new water pump more than $600. You need to call the Auto Protection Network. We're like insurance to protect the inside of your car. We'll save you thousands on costly repair bills. Don't let your car break down without a warranty. Protect yourself from expensive repair bills. If your car has less than 100,000 miles on it and it's less than 10 years old, call today for a free customized quote. 800-477-6061. 800-477-6061. 800-477-6061. 800-477-6061.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. Don't make me come back there. Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. Don't make me come back there. Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Son, I want you home by 10, all right?
I know.
Hold on. Listen, we need to talk about drinking. You know how I feel about alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, you're way too young to drink. I know some kids are drinking, but you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
I mean, you're still growing. You're still developing. You may think you can handle it, but you're not a grown-up yet. It's dangerous.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens.
Listen, when you drink, it screws up your judgment. I don't want you getting hurt. You could make some serious mistakes.
I know, I know.
Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay? I know.
Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm Laura Lawson. This is The Wine Crush, and you are listening to the first show of 2012. Hey, Ken, I'm enjoying the new music, but I thought the song is very, very appropriate. You know what the title of this song
Best
is.
Best Things in Life are Free. What is it? What
Come
is
on.
That? What is that?
What'd I say?
Oh, yeah. It starts out, the best things in life are free or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I just figured that what I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that would actually get through to you.
Well,
and maybe your
so.
Resolution this year could be to actually listen to me.
No, well, you know what your resolution was last year.
Well, to go back.
You were going to go back. No, you were going to. No. I'm talking about last January. You were going to be nice to everybody.
But we
were going to be kinder and gentler all year. Where did that go?
I think I did remarkably well. I didn't pick on anyone too terribly much. Did we get one single nasty letter from the French last year?
No. Not from their embassy. Not from anybody, come to think of it.
See? So I was kinder, gentler.
Okay.
Now, granted, the people in Germany weren't too happy.
I think
we may have heard something from them. But regardless, we laid the law down. We decided we're going to be kind and wonderful, and look where that got us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably nowhere. But since apparently I was boring last year because I behaved, at least the wine world is off to some interesting starts. You know me, I love news, and I like all the funky news. This, to me, is fascinating, and I want to get my hands on a bottle. There is a vintner in Liguria, which, of course, is a region in Italy. He is aging his Bassan Abissi sparkling wine 200 feet below the water surface in a national marine preserve off of Portofino. The wine is actually staying in cages so that it can't wander around, or some random shark, I guess, can't go open a bottle. And it stays down there for 13 months. What has been an interesting side effect of this, because ultimately it's Pierre Lugano, he's a fisherman turned vintner, and he was really out of room at his winery to store wine. And so he looked around and said, well, I'm just going to store it at the bottom of the ocean. What has been fascinating, and like I said, a unique sidebar that he didn't expect, were barnacles are growing on the bottles. So basically, you actually get a totally barnacle-encrusted bottle, and you get to drink it. So nature is having its way, even with the packaging. So this really, really fascinates me. I'm very much looking forward to seeing a bottle. Apparently, it'll be in this country toward the end of the year, and it's going to be selling for $80 to $90. I just have to wonder about the disclaimers on these bottles. I don't know how many of you have actually spent time up and down the coast. Barnacles are sharp. I wish I had a dollar for every time I've gotten my hand cut on some oysters or on barnacles. So my question is, as picky as we are about trying to open champagne bottles and do it correctly, how are you going to do this and not cut your hand off? So that, I think, is a great way to start the year. And also, since Kent just has to listen to me, I figure if I throw random words in here that sometimes are banned on the radio, maybe he'll pay attention. But there was a very special wine made this year.
Mm-hmm.
Penis wine. They actually created a wine that is a delicate blend of dog, deer, and seal penis. And in doing so, they figured by adding these ingredients into the wine, it would help with the antioxidants, it would help with the resveratrol, it would put it all together so that you really got an enlightened, more healthful feeling.
No.
Yeah, Kent, I am not lying to you.
No,
it did make an appearance on National Geographic's The Witch Doctor Will See You Now. It is used fully in some cultures as, whether it's an aphrodisiac, whether it's healing, whether it's medication, penis wine. Maybe that is going to be the next trend we take in 2012. I know some wines that have been named after penises, but I actually can't say I want any in my actual wine.
All right, what would the next wine be? Moving on.
Moving on. Oh, Kent's not enjoying that.
That sounds like no appeal whatsoever.
Absolutely no appeal. Nothing. Oh, we can just take this to such a dark level. You're right. Let's move on. This is something else I have found interesting. Now, this to me, we make fun of these studies on the show occasionally. There's just no ways about it. You know, we're going to study the effects of alcohol, or we're going to study what makes people drink. Get this. Somebody has actually spent money putting a program together to determine that listening to music, particularly loud music, makes you drink more. Now, let's sit back and think about this. Once again, these are dollars going to me just absolutely to waste. Why don't you research the ideas of resveratrol? Why don't you think about the health benefits? Why don't you find a way to do a better container, a better Stelvin, a better closure, a better way to open bottles? No, you're actually going to sit down, spend money to prove that if you listen to loud music, you're going to drink more. Well, let's face facts. Let's look at this objectively. Number one, if music is too loud and I'm stuck there, I'm going to drink more out of defense. It's called defensive drinking, and you actually get through it. Number two, if you're with a group of people and the music is too loud to talk to each other, what else do you have to do but stand there and drink? Number three, when loud music is played, where are you usually? You are at a concert or you're at a bar. Don't you go to those places to drink to begin with? So if loud music makes you drink more, do we really need to spend money on this? Tell you what, any given night in any college city, why don't you just wander out and see what the true effects are on that? I don't know. Just I love looking at words and research like this and going from there. Hey, we're going to take a break here on The Crush, but when we return, we are going to have Mr. John Bond, the wine editor from San Francisco Chronicle, joining us and talking about unheard-of treasures in the wine business.
Have you heard? Proactive is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 1-800-655-0591 because we're going to let a million people try Proactive risk-free, get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial at Proactive, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn upon the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. And to give your ears a rest, and because we have a man who has such a great pedigree and an interesting topic to talk about, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Mr. John Bonnet. John, welcome to The Wine Crush.
Thank you so much.
I actually owe you an apology, and I need to point this out for our listeners. I mispronounced your name in the opening subject. I called you Bond, so I owe you a very, very humble apology.
Not a worry. You can imagine that happens with surprising regularity.
I would imagine. My maiden name used to be Berg, B-O-U-R-G, and I've heard that pronounced so many different ways it's not even funny. So I definitely can commiserate with that. Well, welcome to The Crush. I'm delighted that you were my first guest of 2012 because I loved your idea of the top 100 wines of 2011, the top vintners, not at top dollar. I think that's brilliant. I think that's something that more and more people need to pay attention to.
Absolutely.
So where'd you get your idea to do this? Obviously, you are the wine editor at the San Francisco Chronicle, so you are literally up to your ankles and knees in wine all the time. But what made you decide, hey, listen, let's go off the beaten track. Let's come up with something that people can afford and people can get their hands on.
Sure. We've actually done this as a sort of side note to the top 100 wines for a few years now. And basically, as I keep telling people, the most important thing that our readers always want is they want value for their money. And that doesn't necessarily mean cheap wine. That just means they want to feel like they're getting a good deal. We all do. And so, you know, I've been on sort of a quiet campaign against bargain wines because I think that's sort of I think it's a bad idea. I think sort of telling people to just go out and drink something cheap and it really doesn't make a difference is actually a bad message. It doesn't imply that there's really value in paying for a wine at some point and paying a little bit more for something that speaks to you, that comes from a specific place, that has something to say. And so when we were putting together this list, when I was trying to compile this, what I was looking at was, you know, among the vintners who were making our top 100 wines, were there other wines they made that maybe were just a little less expensive? Were there, you know, what the Europeans might call a second label, where they just, you know, they wanted to make something that, you know, was kind of an everyday wine or a table wine or just something that, you know, was a little bit less, you know, high up the chain. And so, you know, this list kind of made natural sense.
Well, it does. And especially to me, second labels are, in fact, ironically enough, one of the wines I recommended today was Acrobat. And, of course, Acrobat is the second label for King Estate. And you look at that, you look at Hot's Crest from Stag's Leap. There's some absolutely fantastic second labels out there. But I know I'm getting off topic, but I got to ask you this question since you seem to be in the know on these things. Why do you think that so many wineries don't necessarily associate themselves with their second labels?
You know, it's interesting. I think that there is, at least on the West Coast, there is, for some reason, a stigma attached to making a cheaper wine. And I think that, you know, if you're a winemaker or if you've been a winemaker in, let's say, the past 10 to 15 years, your reputation and your fame kind of relies on making your most expensive wine, on being ambitious, on kind of aiming for the stars. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but the thing is that if you look at the longer history of winemaking, even the best vintners in the world, even let's say, Emmanuel Renault at Chateau Rayas in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, you know, you may be making a $250 wine, but you're still making a $20 bottle or a $15 bottle. And you know, elsewhere in the world, for the most part, it's not only considered kind of helpful and important from a business standpoint, it's almost considered a moral responsibility that even if you're making the top wines in the world, even if you're making a Chateau Petrus, you still have a responsibility to make wine that people can drink on an everyday basis.
You have to. And even if you get no situation where, say, I could actually drink Petrus every day of my life, could afford it, no one else in the world can do that. But to be able to have at least the shadow of Petrus, to get an idea, maybe say the bottle of Petrus for once every 6 months and be able to drink a second label once a week, doesn't that help the overall wine business, though?
I think it does, and I think that especially among younger California winemakers, there's increasingly an understanding of that it doesn't matter if you can make an extraordinary wine from extraordinary vineyards. It also matters if you can take your talent and put it to something that you'd actually drink on a Tuesday night. And like I said, this is something that has been just a way of life in wine-growing regions for a long time. And frankly, you mentioned Hawkcrest, was a way of life to some extent in California until, I'm going to say, about 15 years ago when clearly there became this kind of schism between the ambitious winemaking where you were really aiming to make a top expensive wine and everyday winemaking. And basically what happened was the boutique winemakers kind of handed over table wine to big companies. And so now most cheap California wine, or most, let's say, less inexpensive California wine, is really industrially made. And that, to me, is the shame, is that, you know, these are wines that should be made by small wineries. And there are still small wineries that do make some of it. But really, if you're making a top wine, you should be almost, like I said, by simple virtue of, of responsibility, making a less expensive wine.
Oh, by decree, you can imagine it. And I don't care what any top tier, even if we look all up and down the West Coast, whether it's from Washington to Oregon, there is a winemaker. If he's making a $275 bottle of, let's say, Cardinal, somewhere in the back of that winery is that one little barrel he has reserved from himself that may not have been great enough to go into the blend, but it's something that he can produce even if it's for friends and family. It seems like you can't get your art, you can't get your practice by making just one wine. You know that they are making not necessarily inferior wines, but they're making other wines out of the same concept. They have to be.
Exactly. And I think that, I think that there's, there are people who get this. And I think that even if you probably got some winemakers sort of off the record, they would admit that, that they have no problem with this, but it doesn't fit into a business model where everything is about aspirational brands.
Well, that's
everything
just,
is about,
don't you think
everything.
It's an oxymoron to say a business model and aspirational brands, because I think we had Pete Perry from Donna Estates on the show, and he was talking about when Mr. Lee bought Donna, he said, it's only my grandchildren eventually that will make money. You can't have a winery based solely on aspirational brands and expect to stay in business for year after year after year. You have to make money somehow.
Right. Well, and if you look in Europe, the way you make money is a second label. And so it's really puzzling. I mean, the thing that could kind of, that could potentially sort of be a short-term revenue source is something that people have been somewhat skeptical about. Although, you know, it's interesting. Even if you look at Harlan Estate, and by no means is, you know, is there, you know, stuff like the Maiden, particularly a table wine. But, you know, even they see the need to come up with a less expensive tier. And so I just think, you know, going forward in the next 5 years or so, it's going to be really hard to become a new winery, you know, on the West Coast without at least acknowledging that, that someone, you know, someone who can't afford a $100 bottle needs a way in. And I think that, you know, the, there's certainly a reasonable, you know, line of business thinking that says, you know, you capture, I mean, even if you want to have an aspirational brand, you capture people at a lower price and you bring them up. You sell a 3 Series BMW, you sell, your second line of fashion, you know, and maybe it's an H&M, and then, you know, one day they're going to have more money and they're going to have brand loyalty. And
they are, you know, just whether you're buying Kate Spade at Kmart or whether you're actually going to go to a boutique. Hey, John, you and I got so far off tangent. We got to take a quick break right here. Do you mind staying around and we can get back on focus and start talking about your top 100 wines of 2011?
I'll be right here.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here on Lure Crush, and when we return, we'll have more of John and some great insights and hopefully find you some new wines for 2012.
Visit winecrush.com for guest information, wine recommendations, and more. This is the Wine Crush.
Z-Max Micro Lubricant, the only engine and fuel system product that makes your car or truck engine perform better. Legendary car builder Carroll Shelby is sold on Z-Max.
There's no doubt that it's the only additive that really works.
Put Z-Max in your oil and gas and reduce internal friction and harmful deposits.
Z-Max is going to give it a longer life and improve the performance.
Z-Max, tested, trusted performance. Available at auto parts stores and at Z-Max.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 1-800-655-0591 because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free, get 2 free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv, 2 free extras, and free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591.
I'm Jim Cook, brewer of Samuel Adams. Why is Boston Lager loved by beer drinkers? Maybe it's the deep amber color, or the head so thick you could float a bottle cap, or maybe it's just a freaking good beer.
Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass. Safe and responsibly.
Hey, I'm downtown at a festival sampling the refreshing real iced tea taste of Twisted Tea hard iced tea.
Man, this tastes like real iced tea.
But Twisted Tea has a kick.
Twisted Tea,
the refreshing hard iced tea that tastes like real iced tea.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Twist responsibly.
Mozartoasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be. They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Time and time again I see a love that seems strong. Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and right now we are still chatting with Mr. John Bonet. Are you still with us?
I am indeed.
All right. You got your name right that time, too. Once again, I am terribly sorry about that. But see, we all live and learn. Well, you are my favorite kind of guest because I know we set out to talk about, you know, your top 100 of unheard wines or top vintners not at top dollar. But it's always fun just to get off on tangents. And this is such a great business to do it, whether we're talking about second labels, regardless how we're looking at it, we're talking about value. And I did want to ask you a question. And I promise we won't get totally off tangent this time. But you said you're running a quiet campaign against bargain wines. What is your definition of a bargain wine?
That's a good question. So technically, I think at some point we set like $15 as a cap. But, you know, it's sort of hard. I mean, I guess to me, a bargain wine, and I don't even want to use the word bargain wine because bargain is such a loaded word, but what I'll call cheap wine. I wrote this kind of rant about, you know, the false cost of cheap wine last year, or the false promise of it. And it's basically, you know, it's a wine when you are running through the supermarket and you just, you know, you pick up a bottle of whatever and, you know, and head off to dinner. And it's, you know, it could be $6, it could be $8. You know, for some folks, it's probably 10 or 12. And it's interesting, you know, below $10, the chance of you getting a wine that has anything really to say, that has any, you know, any kind of legitimate provenance. And by that, I mean, that was grown somewhere that's not an industrial vineyard. If it's in California, that was, you know, that was not grown, you know, out in the industrial vineyards.
In American Canyon or down in Central Valley or someplace like that.
Well, you know, American Canyon would be fine, but yeah, when you're talking about getting out into, you know, into the sort of thousands and thousands of acres of, you know, not particularly sustainably farmed vineyards, that's sort of what I'm looking at. And you know, even there's exceptions, but on balance, you know, it's when people are just looking to pump stuff through the system at the lowest cost, and, you know, and just, you know, are essentially appealing to people who just don't, you know, they don't care what they're drinking. They just need some bottle. And I don't even want to be too mean in a way because, you know, the more people that are drinking wine, the more people are interested, and ultimately they're going to try different wines and they're going to trade up and they're going to sort of move themselves through the life of a wine drinker.
They are. So they have to start somewhere. Even Kent was laughing earlier. He revisited his Boone Farm days. So I'm with you. If they're drinking wine, I don't care if it's coming out of a spigot. I don't care if it's coming out of a mason jar. At least it's a starting point for people. But I think I do understand where you're going. It's almost like the spigot wines, that years where there's an overabundance of Chardonnay or Cabernet, let's turn the spigot on, change the label, change the back label, let's go.
Kind of, and the thing is, you know, it's more, you know, there's always been a culture of you know, of bulk wine, of wine that just kind of, you know, that just is grown without a whole lot of care, and it's just something that kind of shows up on the table. And, you know, this isn't to pick on California. The Europeans have been doing this long since before we got here.
The Europeans sell it in Pepsi 2-liter gallons. Trust me, seen that.
See, that's the difference, is that, you know, if you want to sell big bulk wine as just big bulk wine and you want to fill a jug with it, that's fine. I mean, you know, people were doing that in Sonoma in the 40s. It's when, you know, it's when everyone decided that they were going to, you know, that invite their marketing departments in and come up with, you know, a kangaroo or a, you know, a monkey or God knows what on the label, and come up with some completely meaningless name and just kind of to try to make these wines look fancier than they really are. That's where I started to have a problem, because it's like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to sort of move up the chain and find more interesting wines and ultimately, you know, wines that have more distinction. But when you sell really cheap wine and try to make it look fancy, I think that ultimately does the industry a disservice.
I think so.
But again, I suspect we're getting, I'm wandering away from.
I'm looking forward to having conversations with you off air. We'll have a ball with this. But let's get back, because number one, tell our listeners where they can read more of your writings, where they can find more of you, because I think a lot of our listeners are going to be enjoying your viewpoint. So do you have a webpage? Is there someplace they can go?
Yeah, best thing is probably to go to ffg, SFGate, SF as in San Francisco, sfgate.com/wine. And that has all the Chronicles wine coverage. So top 100, all of my columns, all the blog stuff, everything.
Absolutely wonderful. Definitely a good resource then. So your top 100 wines of 2011, ultimately, when you started putting this together, obviously you looked at some producers that were in the overall top 100 and try and find something different. What was the baseline to get into the top 100? What was the criteria?
Well, the top 100 is you know, I wish I could say there was a concrete set of criteria, but honestly, it comes down to what were the 100 most interesting wines that I tasted from the West Coast this past year. And it, you know, it wasn't necessarily the absolute best wine in every category because, you know, going back to our discussion of price, you know, if I wanted to find the absolute best Cabernets that were, you know, that were out in the world to find from, you know, let's say Napa, and I had no price limit, I could fill the top 100 with $150, $200 wines.
No one a service. Absolutely right. No one, unless you're one of the Silicon Valley billionaires. We're trying to appeal to the general public. We got to not break the bank every time we come up with a great list, which is why yours appeals to me so much.
Yeah, and so somewhat some of it just came down to what did I think were the wines that you know offered the most for the money. What were the wines that just didn't matter what the cost was, were absolutely stupendous wines that needed, you know, a spotlight shone on them. And then to some extent, you know, what's the most interesting work being done? You know, it's not necessarily a question of, you know, can you do another amazing by the number Chardonnay, but you know, can you make a wine that really, you know, shows its origins and shows, you know, and shows the talents of the winemaker, and it's just flat out delicious. And so, you know, for instance, our category of kind of other whites, which is, you know, everything from Riesling to Albarino to these, you know, crazy blends that people are putting together, was big. I think it was 16 or 17 wines this year, because people are working with such interesting stuff. You know, Grenache Blanc and Vermentino and all these grapes that, you know, really weren't even being discussed a couple of years ago in California are suddenly making an appearance.
Oh, yeah, and people and winemakers are getting behind these kind of things. Well, as much as I hate to do this, you and I have just rambled on that I am unfortunately going to have to bring this to a close, but I will tell our listeners that a link to the top 100 wines of 2011 is definitely going to be on the Wine Crush website. And John, if you don't mind, would definitely love to have you back on the Crush one day. You and I can have a lot of fun.
Love to do it anytime.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a break on the Crush. Once again, special thanks to John Bonnet for being part of the Crush today. And when we return, we will wrap the show up and plan further for 2012.
Follow host Laura Lawson on Twitter at Wine Crush Radio. This is the Wine Crush.
Designer and car builder Carol Shelby knows cars.
I have a passion for cars.
Carol Shelby recommends Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
This stuff really works. It penetrates the metal.
Add Z-Max to your oil and gas. It cleans internal components, delivers a cleaner fuel system, extends engine life, and improves engine performance.
Z-Max is going to give it a longer life and improve the performance.
Z-Max, available at auto parts stores and at zmax.com.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway and you'll also receive free shipping.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 1-800-655-0591 because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free, get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Call 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591. 1-800-655-0591.
I'm Jim Cook, brewer of Samuel Adams. Why is Boston Lager loved by beer drinkers? Maybe it's the deep amber color, or the head so thick you could float a bottle cap, or maybe it's just a freaking good beer.
Yeah. Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass. Safe and responsibly.
Hey, I'm downtown at a festival sampling the refreshing real iced tea taste of Twisted Tea hard iced tea.
Man, this tastes like real iced tea.
But Twisted Tea has a kick.
Twisted Tea,
the refreshing hard iced tea that tastes like real iced tea.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Twist responsibly.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chomps through anything. Just put it on and instantly chomp through wood. Hi-hi! Concrete. Hi-yah! Brick walls. Hi-yah! Trees. Hi-yah! Small cars. It can even chomp through these 8 guitars. It chomps things!
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
I'm Laura Lawson, and this is The Wine Crush, and I am just grinning from ear to ear because ultimately I don't think I could have planned this. I couldn't have organized it to have something work out just the way it did. Obviously, before we had JonBenet on, once again, thank you very much. He is the wine editor of the San Francisco Chronicle for joining us. We were discussing the fact that 2012 needs to be the year of open mind. Let's not have set boundaries. Let's not have set rules. And this is exactly where an open mind can lead you. Yes, I know that Kent's back in the booth thinking, Laura, you had a point to the guest and you never quite got to the point. But ultimately, think about what an interesting conversation sprung up around that. Whether you're discussing second labels, whether you're discussing bargain wines, you're discussing the fact that how winemakers can make or break themselves on aspirational wines. These are all the great cores and great ideas that conversation is based off of. And when you start talking about wine in more of an open sense, you aren't looking at specifics, hey, tell us exactly how you do this, then think about what we all just took for that conversation. So ultimately, even though I did not plan it, this is how 2012 should work for you. You might set off with a goal in mind when it comes to your wine studies or your wine tasting or your wine curve on what you want to learn. But ultimately, along the way, if you get sidetracked, if something else comes along your path, if something else shows up, don't think of it as an end-all be-all. Remember, just like everyone says, that life is about the journey. Your wine knowledge, your wine quest is about the journey, because you're never going to get to point A or point B in a straight line, particularly if you're sitting back and enjoying the wine. We all know that. But ultimately, the more you take time to look at the surroundings, to look at all the great little details and everywhere this can bring you, the more fulfilling your wine life will be in 2012. I'm Laura Lawson here at The Wine Crush. As always, we're reminding you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told, but most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.